Alright, so... Tam him vatum the brahmachari vamanam dwarf trishna sin madamanaha in a happy mood maharishyaha the great saintly persons Karmani, ritualistic ceremonies. Kareyam, asuhu, performed. Puraskritya, keeping in front. Prajapatim, Kashapamuni, the Prajapati. So, translation. When the great sages saw the Lord as the brahmachari dwarf, Vamana, they were certainly very pleased. Thus they placed before them Kashyapa Muni, the Prajapati, and performed all the ritualistic ceremonies, such as the birthday ceremony. You could repeat. When the great sages saw the Lord, as the brahmachari dwarf, Vamana, they were certainly very pleased. Thus they placed before them Kashyapa Muni. The Prajapati. And performed all the ritualistic ceremonies. Such as the birthday ceremony. So purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Śrīla Prabhupāda Śrīla Prabhupāda Ki Jai. According to Vedic civilization, when a child is born in the family of a brahmana, the birthday ceremony, known as Jata Karma, is first performed, and then other ceremonies are also gradually performed. But when this brahmana rupa appeared in the form of a vatu or brahmachari, his sacred thread ceremony was also performed immediately. So, tam vatum vamadham drishva modamana maharashyaha karmani karihamasu uraskritya prajapatim som agana timananda shaganamjana shalakya chakshurun minitam gina tasmai shigurvena maha. So, what you're hearing about here is something called a samskara. So you've heard this word many times before, and we're going to define the word and actually tell you different meanings of it according to different contexts. So sam, you have the word samskara, sams, and then kara. There's two words there. Sang is similar to, is actually the same as the word, or the first part of the word, sankirtan. So as you know, sankirtan means, in one sense, congregational chanting of the Lord's holy names. And in another sense, it means complete or absorbed chanting. You know, sang means complete, absorbed. So this way, indirectly it's understood as congregational chanting, but it basically means everyone or complete or absorbed chanting of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and also sankirtan. So here we have samskara. So this means complete or absorbed activity. Like activity kritya, kara, like karma. These are all similar words. And so they all, it means work. Complete work or complete activity. So what that means implicitly is several different things. One thing is it's a complete observance of a particular stage in life. Just like in every culture, you have these different stages of life, you know, coming of age, like the Cuban culture and some of the Latin cultures, they have this sweet 16 where, of course, the girls go out and they just, whatever, sweet 16. I think I don't need to describe that in a class. And then in the Jewish culture, they have this thing called the Bar Mitzvah, which is at 13 years of age. And then the boy has his samskara. And then the girls became envious of that, and they developed a female form of it called the Bas Mitzvah, which the girls also do the same thing. But traditionally, it wasn't for girls, it was just for boys. So, anyway, and then you have, in the Western world, of course, you have birthday parties, which every year you observe the birthday party of your little baby or kid or something like that, and you get presents. And, of course, you have the Vyaspuja, the spiritual master. So there's all these different, it's called reformatory. The reason it's called reformatory measure, directly it doesn't mean reformatory, but indirectly it means reformatory. Reformatory because it creates a perfect or an impression in the mind of the person who's having or doing the samskara. As we talk about, like, perfect or complete action. So it creates a perfect or complete impression in the mind. So in the Vedic system, there's many of these different samskaras. And these samskaras are meant to sort of like civilize the person, because there's that statement, janmana jayate shudra samskara bhavet dvijam, that by birth, or yes, by birth, one is shudra. The shudra, of course, means one is completely in the mode of ignorance. If we analyze the Varnashram system, shudra is in ignorance, and the vices combine passion and ignorance, kshatriyas and passion, and brahman is in goodness. So by birth, everyone is a shudra. And then samskara bhavet dvijam. The one can become twice born by the samskara. Of course, this word dvija also refers to birds in Sanskrit. Because a bird is twice born. Once he comes out of, or the egg comes out of the mother, then the mother sits on the egg, and then after some time the egg hatches, and that's the second birth of the bird. So by the Vedic system of samskaras, you create different impressions in the subtle body of the living entity. And these impressions, of course, by samskaras are meant to purify one, and one has bad impressions, not necessarily from samskaras, but from bad samskaras. And because the word samskara can also mean a bad impression or impressions from the past. You hear the devotees say this quite often. They say, I have really bad samskaras. Really, really bad samskaras. And just like I was talking to one devotee the other day, and we were just mentioning something very, very, very innocent, and they said, well, that's a drug term. And I said some one word, and they said, oh, you didn't pronounce that word of the drug properly. Because this particular individual had not only taken drugs before, but sold them. And so they had all these samskaras, that means impressions. So taking the literal meaning of the word, it directly means a complete impression. Okay, something you do that creates a complete impression in the mind. So they have all these sinful samskaras in the past. And so we have so many sinful samskaras in the past lives. I mean, that's why we're born with so many different tendencies. Another meaning of the word samskara is a tendency that comes from the past. So they're all connected with the literal definition of the word samskara. It means a tendency that comes from the past. Like you have bad samskaras, someone may have good samskaras in the past life, and then they take to Krishna consciousness automatically because they're taking up from where they left off in a previous life. And of course, the chanting of the holy names, as we hear from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Cheto Dharpana Marjana, it cleanses the heart. But what is it cleansing the heart of? It cleanses the heart of all these samskaras, the bad samskaras, not the Krishna conscious samskaras. It cleanses the heart, and in order to perceive the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one has to have a clean heart in order to have the Lord sit, just like it's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about the Gundicha Marjana story. Then in order to have the Lord sit in your heart, you have to cleanse it thoroughly, like Lord Chaitanya cleansed thoroughly the Gundicha temple so that Lord Jagannath can go there on the Ratha Yatra. So anyway, so the Vedic system, there's all these different reformatory practices which are called samskaras to create good impressions in the heart, or to create good progeny, and to create good fortune for the living entity. And really, in the Vedic system, they're quite important. Of course, if we chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day, it may not be necessary to perform all these samskaras, because automatically everything was there in the holy names. Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purnashuru Nichimukto Vinatvam Namanamino. I mean, Krishna is fully there in his holy name. The name is Chintamani. It's a desire tree. You really don't have to get into anything else if you're chanting the holy name continually. However, for preaching Krishna consciousness, it's important that we're aware of these samskaras, because we're dealing with people from cultures where they perform the samskaras. So I'm going to talk about some of the, actually, there's 16 samskaras, 16 regular samskaras, and there's sub-samskaras within the 16 samskaras. So it gets a little complicated. Of course, the first one, obviously, is called the Garbhadan samskar. In other words, Garbha means like womb. So when the lady is being impregnated by the man, it's important to have the proper consciousness. In fact, this is the samskara that Prabhupada talks about the most. If you go through Prabhupada's books, you look up samskara, you find Garbhadan samskara there like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. And Prabhupada hardly mentions the other samskaras. He does mention, but very, very briefly. So it creates the right impression in the mind of the mother and father, so that the proper soul is attracted to the womb. I mean, through the semen, from the semen into the womb of the lady. And so, you see in the case of the demons that appeared, for example, Kashyap and Diti, the right consciousness was not there. They had a samskara, but that was practically a mode of ignorance samskara. Technically speaking, like I said, samskara means a perfect impression or a perfect work, activity that creates an impression. So it was a mode of ignorance impression. And as a result, you had Aranyakashipu and Aranyakashipu being born. And there's many stories of this in the Vedic literatures. I mean, for example, the appearance of Ravan. You have Kekashi and Vishravas. And Kekashi was a demon lady, and Vishravas was a Brahmin, but Vishravas fell into Maya. And because of this improper consciousness, then they had Ravana and Kumbhakarna. And of course, Vibhishan, somehow or other, consciousness wasn't quite that bad, because Vibhishan came about too. Vibhishan and our friend Surpanaka, the lady with the nice nails. So this Garbhadan samskara is extremely important. Then Prabhupada, of course, advised devotees to chant 50 rounds before the procreation. And the whole idea is to fix the mind on Krishna, and then pray, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when there was the pregnancy of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was praying for a ray of Vishnu, the right-hand man, of the Supreme Personality of God in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and as a result, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur came. And then, the next samskara, because we want to make sure we have time for all the samskaras, the Pulsam samskara, and that means right after it's discovered the lady is pregnant, then there's all sorts of different things, like she eats certain foods and prays in a certain way. And, you know, some people say that it's so that she gets a son. But in any case, it's created a very, very nice atmosphere. And then there's the next one is Simantaniyam, which is basically the parting of the hair. She's still pregnant, like 3 or 4, 5 months pregnant. And then they have this hair parting. Now, the reason for the hair parting is not that she needs to have a haircut or something like that. Is that because for the ladies, Prabhupada said, combing the hair is one of their main businesses. Prabhupada said that, don't blame me. It's one of their main businesses. And it somehow or other, it's pleasurable for them to have a nice hairdo. I don't know why. So the lady has, because however the lady is thinking or feeling or what her consciousness is like, when the child is in the womb, the child will be affected their whole life. For example, you have Kayadu, who was in the ashram of Narada Muni, and she was hearing Krishna Katha. And as a result, her little son, Balad Maharaj, became Krishna conscious. And then you find ladies who are in complete stress during the pregnancy, and the child is just like a nervous wreck as soon as he comes out. It really shapes the consciousness of what is happening to the mother during, and if she's fighting, of course, the child will be also have psychological issues if she's fighting during the pregnancy. So anyway, so that's the next one. The next one is Jato Karma, which is actually very interesting. That is it's a ritualistic birthday ceremony. Here it says, Yakanama performed, Karmani. Yeah. The next verse is, Anyway, so the Jata Karna is it, karma, is actually a very interesting ceremony. It's right after the appearance of the child comes out of the womb. And what happens is, this is actually before the child even takes breast milk from the mother. They give the child some honey to sweeten up their life. They give a little honey on the tongue, not a whole jar of honey, just a little drop of honey. And they whisper a secret name into the child. This is not the name-giving ceremony, but there's a secret name, or the name the child will later get, that is whispered into the child's ear. Like, your name is George, yeah, or whatever. Or Fulanito de Tal in Spanish. Fulanito de Tal means just guy. So, and essentially, the name they give, according to the Vedic system, the boys are supposed to have names of even syllables, and the girls are supposed to have names of odd syllables. Did you know this? It's interesting. Tradition. And the girls' names are supposed to end with I, like that. Of course, we don't always follow it. I mean, sometimes we give names to children, incarnations of God, and we don't follow that strictly. And also, there's the Kundali or the astrologer that does the astrology, and you name the child according to the stars and the planets under which the child is born. Then, 11 days after the child is born, you get Namakarna, the official name ceremony. In which you announce to everyone. It's a little complicated. Excuse me. It's pretty complicated, all these different procedures that are there. It's almost better to be a brahmachari you don't have to do all these procedures to make life so complicated. Anyway, next is the Nishkramana, which is a very interesting thing. So after 3 weeks, depending on actually depends upon the caste of the child and the parents, the child is brought out to the sunshine and sees the sun and the moon for the first time. Because before that, the child was actually kept in the home. And many traditional cultures, they observe keeping the child in the home and don't let the child out until like 2 or 3 weeks. In China, in certain places, they keep the child inside for like several months before the child comes out. So this is a traditional thing. Then, we're only up to number 7. Mm-hmm. It gets a little unwieldy here. Then the anaprasna. Now the anaprasna is done at, it's interesting. Thank you. Muchas gracias. The anaprasna is done to give grains to the kid for the first time. Traditionally, it's supposed to be the even months for the boy, the odd months for the girl. Usually about 6 months, 5-6 months, that the child gets grains as solid food for the first time. Then after that, there's the chuda karana, which means the hair cutting. And the reason for this, Prabhupada said if you cut, especially a girl's hair when she's very young, you know, you shave off the hair, then it'll grow back very luxuriantly later on. So the girl will have much to do with her life. And then, a lot of activities when she gets older, combing the hair, going to the hairdresser, things like that. And then after that, there's a Karna Aveda. I'm sorry, Aveda would be the right way to pronounce it, which means the ear piercing. That's why you see many, many cases of the little children with earrings on, because that's actually one of the baby's ritualistic things. Even the boys do that. And then after some time, then when the child is ready to go to school, you have the Upanayana. Upanayana means, like at 5 years old, the child gets a sacred thread from the ritualistic Kula Brahmana or Kula Guru. And then he enters school, and attached to that particular ceremony is the taking up of chalk for the first time. Hati. Taking up the chalk for the first time and writing on the board or writing on something where the child is entering into education. And then as the child is doing it, there's another ceremony, which is called Keshanta. Kesh means hair. Again, hanta means without. So the hair is shaved again. This is for boys, traditionally. And the child goes out and he collects guru dakshin for the guru. So you see this sometimes in the Indian movies, that there's a little child like 5 or 6 years old. And you see this with Vamanadeva too. The child goes out and gets guru dakshin for the spiritual master. And then after the child gets educated, that's the entry into school, there's the Samavartan, which means he returns home. In other words, he's graduated. That's like the graduation ceremony like you have at the university. Of course, at the university, they're engaged in all sorts of simple activity, but traditionally in the Vedic culture, the child would be living in the ashram of the spiritual master, and he would return home. And once they return home, there's another interesting ceremony, which is called the Vivaha. Vivaha means there's a marriage. Now, according to the different varnas, marriages would be arranged differently. Of course, for the Kshatriyas, you have the Swayamvara. Swayamvara literally means she chooses her own. In other words, the ladies would choose their own husband. Just like you see, Swayamvara actually changed throughout the ages. In the beginning of the Mahabharata, you find Kunti Devi is actually choosing her husband. This is really interesting. She chooses Pandu. It's not that there's not necessarily competition, but she chooses Pandu. And later on, there's more of a competition, like you see with Draupadi. There's actually a competition between the different Kshatriyas as to who will win her, and she's sort of considered to be the prize. So you see the Swayamvara actually started to degrade as they got closer to Kali Yuga. In the beginning, it was the girl who was presented with all of her possible suitors, that means possible marriage partners, and she would examine them or test each one. And she would choose, oh, he's the one. Or she would say, none of them are the one. But later on it became a competition and the girl was seen as the prize. And you see that, and the girl was given away against her will. That's why later on when Krishna got married to Rukmini, he kidnapped her. Because she was supposed to be given to Shishupala against her will. Completely against her will. And Subhadra was going to be given to Duryodhana completely against her will. And so there had to be a kidnapping there. So you see that things changed through the whole story of the Mahabharata. And of course, you had Grandfather Bhishma, you know, take the three girls, Kashi's daughters, you know, Ambika, Ambalika, and Amba. He stole them anyway. That was a different story. So anyway, so there's a vivaha, and usually in the Vedic system, the marriage ceremony would last for 3 or 4 days, like 12 hours or 18 hours. You'd have to sit there, and sometimes it was so hot. I remember seeing some of my friends go through a marriage ceremony for 3 days in South India during the summer, and they were sweating. I said, how did you tolerate it? And all the relatives there. And of course, during the marriage ceremonies, generally the men don't pay too much attention. They just talk to each other in the back, and the women sit in front and they cry. So there's vivaha. So a person gets married. That's the next samskara. I want to finish up with samskaras. After that, then there's the vanaprastha, the retirement. That the husband and wife retire, they go to the forest, or they remain in a sacred place, serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's described that in Kali Yuga, the preferable stage of renunciation is called Kshetra Sannyas. Like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was like a Kshetra Sannyasi. That means he remained in a holy place and wasn't engaged in sense gratification. His wife was there, his children were there, but they were serving Lord Jagannath. They were serving in Jagannath Puri, and of course advising the king and acting as a Brahmin. Then the next one, the next state, samskara, is called sannyas. Not that everybody takes sannyas, but sannyas, the word means to accept things favorable for serving Krishna or reject things unfavorable. Like you have the same thing, like samskara, sannyas. Sannyas means to accept or complete. Nyas, it sometimes can mean complete renunciation, but it also means to accept things and reject things. Like nyasa or nyasi means to reject things. And san means to accept. So accepting things favorable for spiritual life and rejecting things unfavorable. Sannyas. And then finally, after you've taken sannyas and prepare to leave this mortal world, the last samskara is called antyeshti, which means your funeral. And then, of course, connected with that, boy, that's a nice devotees here. Connected to that, after that, you have these Shraddha ceremony, which is not a samskara. Shraddha ceremony is not a samskara. The Shraddha ceremony is meant to keep your ancestors in heaven or in Pitri Loka and save your ancestors. Without Shraddha, of course, the ancestors go to hell. So therefore the son is called Putra. He or she, Putri, who saves the father, mother, ancestors from going to hell. So anyway, so these are the different samskaras, and whether we do them or not, is dependent upon the situation. Obviously, if you're in India or dealing with people from India, then it's important to do these various samskaras because it's part of civilization. Whereas when we are following the Bhagavad Dharma, Bhagavad Vidhi, then really everything is accomplished. Was that Shraddha Shabdevisha Sakahi? Sudrida Nishya, having faith that everything is accomplished by hearing and chanting and engaging in the Navabhakti processes. So, anyway, so any questions or comments? We have about 1 minute left. Yes?
I was just thinking about how, I guess what came to mind was that, like, the ultimate completeness of
yeah, they're actually meant to connect you to the goal of life.
Right.
Yeah. It's not just a ritual. They're meant to connect you to someone to the goal of life. So depending on someone's status, that is, you know, how advanced they are, whether they're fully engaged in bhakti, there may be a necessity to perform or not a necessity to perform these different samskaras. And of course, not that everybody in every ashram would be performing, well, obviously brahmacharis not going to be performing all these samskaras. They're mainly, most of the samskaras are for householders.
So is with the holy names, with chanting the Mahamantra, be considered
yes.
a form like they
that is a samskara. So we perform that samskara all the time. We should be. And by performing this samskara all the time, there may not be a necessity doing that. Yeah, of course. I'm not advocating that, you know, we learn all these different samskaras. For preaching, yes, it's necessary. But everything is there in Krishna's holy name. But it's mentioned here in this portion of the Bhagavatam, so it's good we're aware of what these different samskaras are. And we'll read about Lord Vamanadev having some of the samskaras.
Don't they make life even though more favorable?
Yes, yeah, they're important. I'm not saying we don't do them. And the best way to do all of them is to chant the holy names while you're doing them.